Hello, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester from the Cooking Without Looking TV show. I'm the creator and executive producer of the show. It was the first TV show ever created featuring people who are blind and visually impaired. And today we have Roger Sullivan, who is going to tell us all about his life and his air fryer chicken. Hello. How are you, Roger?
Very well. And you?
I'm doing great today. How's the weather over there? You're in New Jersey or Pennsylvania?
No, I'm Pennsylvania. Yeah, close to New Jersey, not too far from there. But yeah, it's a little breezy, not too hot, not too cold. It's perfect for a nice little sit out.
Oh, that's good. Are you outside?
No, I'm in the house. My phone won't pick up on the internet if I'm outside for some reason. Must be. I live in an old one-room schoolhouse that was converted into a house.
Oh, how cool is that? How old is it?
Oh, this school dates back to the early 1800s.
Amazing. And then you refurbished it or someone else did?
The landowner did. I rent. I'm too old to own a house.
Oh, okay. All righty. Well, Roger.
By the time...
I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, that's okay. Go ahead.
We always say that we are here to change the way people see blindness. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, of course, you've already heard my name, but my name's Roger Sullivan, and I've had poor vision all my life, but I just never knew how poor it really was until later on in school when I was made aware of the National Library Service. And I was like in fifth or sixth grade at the time, and my teacher got me hooked up with that, and I started using those large print books, and I couldn't never really see those either, so I didn't really pay much attention, and my grades were very poor. So then they decided to get the tape series, and I didn't like that either because it wasn't right where the kids were, and it was difficult. Back then they were on tape. They had the cassette tape and the record and the player, and it was very difficult to rewind and go back and forth and keep up with what the other students were. So I kind of didn't do anything. I figured, I'm not going to do nothing at all. So I made it through grade school, and then I went through junior high with difficulty. No matter where they put me in the room, I couldn't see the board, and it didn't even matter how big they made the letters, I just couldn't see it.
Wow.
So they again, when I hit 10th grade, they got me involved in the large book program again. I said, I can't see books. And I said, oh, at least you can do is try. So they didn't embarrass me. They kept my books in the back of the room where I sat, and I would grab one, and then I was embarrassed because I'd had to fumble through all those books just to find the right spot where all my other classmates were in that book, and I couldn't find the chapters or anything, so I just didn't do anything at all, and my grades suffered through that.
Did the other kids know that you had a vision problem?
They knew I couldn't see well, but they didn't know that to the extent, because if they did, they'd be calling me bug eyes, because some have done that. They've called me bug eyes and different names like that. So I kept it on the down low. And back in the 70s and early 80s, you got bullied for having a disability. Some people, you just got bullied. And we lived in a rural community, and it was much worse, because you had to live in the neighborhood with all those people. So you just kind of kept to yourself and didn't say anything about it. And then when I got a job, I finally got a job that I could keep in 1989. I applied for a hospital job, and they hired me, and I just ad-libbed. They asked me if I had any problems. Oh, no, I don't have any problems.
And then, what kind of a hospital job, Roger?
I was working in the housekeeping department. I'm like, even a blind guy could do this stuff. So I did it, and I was doing patient rooms, and I kept getting wrote up for missing spots in patient rooms and things like that. But and I didn't say anything. And then, oh, I've worked there for 20 years, and then for like 2/3 of that, they kept me on one job, and I thought I was doing great. That's why they kept me on that one job. Well, it turned out that my eye doctor specialist, which is right across the street from the hospital that I worked, had a meeting with them because they were going to fire me.
Oh.
And the eye doctor said, you can't fire Mr. Sullivan. He's got a family. He can't see. If you fire him, he'll never get a job anywhere else. And, you know, he won't be able to take care of his family. So
how
they,
did you find out they told that they helped you that
he,
way?
He told me several years later when I had my current eye problem where in 2008, he waited till 2008 to tell me that. Well, I kept your job for you all those years at Warren General because I told him that you had a family and, you know, just to find something you could do. So that's what they did. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that I was being pampered upon by the by the staff of Warren General. If I would have known that, I would have been angry. But I'm glad they didn't let me know.
Do you think that that's the reason a lot of people hide, you know, whatever vision issue they have, because they might lose their job or people will look at them differently?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, fortunately, times are changing. You know, times are changing, and the people that were bullied for certain things 20, 25, 30 years ago, they're not being bullied anymore. They're being looked after in some cases, not all, but in some cases they're being looked after and watched out for because they're making effort and they're not, you know, they're just tired of being bullied. So they come right out with it and take whatever they get. And for a lot of cases, they don't get bullied anymore. So
that's
I'm glad
thing.
Of that. Yeah. So then in 2008, I really couldn't see hardly anything at all. So I called any eye doctor I could get on a Saturday, said, I need to get in. I can't see, man. I was freaking out. And so they got me into the doctor's office, and he's looking at me, and he says, Roger, no wonder you can't see. I said, what? He goes, well, your optic nerves are dying. You have what they call optic atrophy. Your optic nerves are supposed to be a rosy pink color, but yours are bone white. I went, oh.
Wow.
So what's that mean? Am I going to go completely blind? Well, I don't know. This could be like this for a while, but eventually, probably, as you age, you will. So, and that's where I'm at today. So I'm like, what do I do? So I just started going through all these books and literature to see what I could do. So I found the Visual Services, which is in the town of Erie, PA, and I called them up, and they helped me get orientation and mobility training, and they got me set up. That was the most scariest time of my life, when I had to learn to get around and depend on people to tell me the truth, like navigating around town. And when I got training, they didn't train me in my own town. They took me all the way to the city to do that.
Oh, and no. So that was
they,
scary. Orientation and mobility in a big city.
It was scary because I'm a country boy. And they taught, and they told me how to get on the bus. And when you get on a bus and the bus door opens, don't ask them, you know, don't make a question out of it because they'll just shake their head. So you got to say it. Well, you got to say what instead of is. Say, what bus is this? Is this bus 22? Yes, it is. You know, so no. And that kind of stuff like that. So because if you say, is what bus is this? If you don't say that, if you say, is this bus 22? They'll shake their heads. They won't even speak, even though you got a big old white cane in front of your face, you know?
Yeah, so, they don't always understand that white cane, do they?
No, they don't. And some people don't today. They don't today still. They're like, what's that thing for? This guy, I work at our local YMCA, and this is funny. This guy was a counselor for a human services counselor, and he's walking down. He goes, "Raj, what's that thing that you're using?" I said, "What do you mean, what thing? This white thing?" "Yeah, what is that?" I said, "Oh, I'm looking for water." And he goes, "Oh."
Tap into the water supply, right, Roger?
Yeah, that's right. I said, "I'm looking for water." I'm like, stupid questions get stupid answers.
Well, what's the craziest question you've ever gotten?
What's the craziest question I ever got?
Yeah, about your vision.
How do I eat? I gave him a stupid answer to that one, too. I said, "What? I just take the bowl and I put all my food in the bowl, because it don't matter if it's all mixed up, and I just throw it on the floor so I don't make a table mess. Isn't that how you guys eat?"
What did they say? How did they reply?
Most of the time they don't respond at all. They're like, dumb question gets a dumb answer. So yeah. So
you pretty much know where your mouth is.
Yeah. It's muscle memory. Your arm does know the how many bends it takes to get to the center of your face, you know? So, yeah. So, yeah, it's very... So, I've been... So, then I got connected with the NFB, and they helped me out quite a bit. And I've gotten a job through BBVS. I work at the YMCA. I do cleaning.
Oh, what do you do there?
I clean the gym areas and stuff. So,
right.
You know, obviously we don't do detail work, but I give 100% of what I can do. Like Helen Keller said. Yeah. Like Helen Keller said, I won't refuse to do anything I can do. So
during this coronavirus, you've really, you're one of the essential workers.
Well, no, not really. We were laid off from, let me see. We got laid off, about mid-March, and we didn't get called back until probably a couple weeks now. We've been back. Yeah, we weren't considered, because they closed down the gyms and everything here. They just shut down everything. And we did go back earlier before the gym opens, because the YMCA applied for that grant that they could keep their people on the payroll. We were able to go back a little early and make sure everything was up to snuff for reopening. And even now we're under strict guidelines. Like, we had to move some equipment around and put it in different rooms so that we can keep that 6-foot distance and hand sanitizer all over the building and mask. We have to wear masks.
So how do you find that 6-foot distance as a person who's legally blind?
Well, all the machines are spaced out within 6 foot from the other machine. So you can get on it like somebody has a treadmill. Now, we have a row of 9 treadmills, but so they alternate every other one, because they're already 6 foot apart from each other, every other one. So what they do is they have like half of them going at one time. Like one day we only have 3 going. The next day we have the 4 going, because they're alternate. And then, you know, they alternate back and forth. So not all the treadmills are working on the same day. So that's how they do that.
What are some of the things that you try and impart upon people who are not blind or visually impaired? What are the things you like to make them aware of?
That we don't need their help, per se, because I've had people go, they would literally grab my arm and say, "I'll help you across the street." And I said, "No, I got this. You know, I know what I'm doing. I've been doing it for years." Yeah, they'll do that, and they're not really, really helpful at all.
No, they don't realize that, though.
And don't assume. Just ask a question. You know, don't assume. Say, "Hey, would you like me to help?" "No, I got this." You know, and for the most part, if you're a regular in certain places, they won't even bother you. They'll let you go about your business and do whatever you do.
Well, it's also a little frightening. I'm sorry, go on. I was just saying, it's a little frightening to get grabbed like that.
Oh, it is. It is by far, yes. Yes, by far, it's very annoying. But and going to the dock, and then I can't drive, so I get on the bus, and then you get people that ask questions, and this is a very scary one that I want you to pass on to your people, is they'll ask you if your dog bites, if you have a guide dog. I have a guide dog, but he's retired now, so he's just my casual buddy right now. He just plays around and sleeps and plays around and eats. But when he was an active guide dog, people would ask, does he bite? And you say, yeah, he does bite, because you don't want to set yourself up for being robbed.
Interesting. That's the first time I've heard that one.
Yeah, because that will happen. If they know your dog won't bite, they'll people rob you because they know you can't see them.
Wow, never thought of that.
And then also, they'll say, do you make a lot of money? You know, you're riding the bus. Don't you make money? Well, no, I don't make any money, or I wouldn't be riding the bus. You don't tell people you ride the bus out of necessity rather than whether you've got money or you don't.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know.
Unfortunately, this is the world that if there's something out there, somebody will exploit it, unfortunately.
Well, do you take Uber or Lyft? Do they help you more than taking the bus?
We do have Lyft service per se, and we call those for when I need grocery assistance.
Sure.
And then I ride the regular transit bus because I'm on the route. So I just get an ADA ticket, which is cheaper than a standard fare. So
yeah,
I just take that. It comes right outside my house, and I just go right to work. And it's across the street, but my wife works with me. So she works in the front of the building, and I work in the back. And she helps me across the street. And then on days that she doesn't work, I call a coworker who lives right down the street from me. She's a trainer. She comes in and picks me up so I don't have to cross the street. So, it's actually a highway.
Well, tell us about your cooking expertise. How long have you been cooking?
Oh, I've been cooking all my life. I love to cook. That's my solace. That's one thing I could do, because I failed at everything else I ever tried to do because I didn't want to admit that I couldn't see. And I figured if I tried, maybe I could figure out a way, and I never could. So I'm like, man, I got to have something to do. And I realized that I enjoy cooking and burning things, and you learn from it. But my favorite recipe is chicken, because chicken's cheap and it's good for you somewhat, as long as you like it. But I have a recipe that I use and I have all kinds of gadgets. I don't mess with a regular oven because it's electric. And I don't want it. Yeah, I don't like to mess with it. My wife doesn't like me to mess with it either. So I use I have my own tools. I have a new wave oven, the old school one that's round. It's an air fryer cooker. You can cook anything on that thing.
One of our people, she uses the air fryer. I've tasted some things from it. So you really like it, right?
Yes. Yes, yep, it's good. Yeah, and the recipe that I have is really, really, really good.
Tell us.
If you'd like me, okay, the recipe is it's air fried chicken through the net, or you can even do it in your oven. If you don't have an air fryer, you can do the oven. Just kind of crack your oven a little bit so the moisture can come out.
Oh.
And what you do is you take that and you take some chicken strips you could buy at the store, or you can get a bone-in chicken breast and cut your own strips. It'll be cheaper because, you know, that when they do stuff for you, they charge you more for it. But so you take and you make these strips, and you make sure you cut with the grain of the meat and not against it. And you cut these strips, and then you just put a little bit of olive oil on them. You know, just shake them around there a little bit. And then you dip them in, season your flour with some salt and pepper, a little bit of onion powder. And you stir it up with a whisk or a gloved hand, whatever you want to do. A lot of people like to use their hands for everything, but I don't. And then you put it out, you put your chicken in there and shake it around until it gets covered. Then you take it and you put it in an egg bath and get that all nice and coated. And then you re-dunk it in the batter. And then you now, put it out of the...
I was going to ask, do you leave some time for that first batter to just sit there on it? Or do you do it away?
I just do it right away. Just get it right in there and get her on the tray. And then I set my oven for like 14 minutes on each side, and then I flip it over because it takes about anywhere between 28 and 30 minutes in my air fryer. And you can tell by the texture. I take it and touch it with a knife, and you can tell if it's done or not. It'll start to break apart lightly. So you do that cooking, and then you, while you're doing that, that'll give you time to clean up the mess that you made while you did that. You get rid of the bowls or whatever, clean it. So you got your area clear. So you clean all those bowls and things that you use and put them away. And then you get out a little saucepan and you turn the heat on low. And then you dump in some honey in the pan. I like to use about a cup and a half of honey in this pan.
Oh.
And then you take some crushed red pepper. Some Ooh. Crushed hot peppers. You take those and you about a half a teaspoon and you put those in the honey and stir it around, and you let that heat get into that flavored heat get into that honey. And you let that warm. Don't bring it to a boil. Just get it warming. And then when your chicken's done, you place that in the bowl with that, and you pour that honey over top. And then you put a lid on and shake it lightly till all that honey gets over top of that. And then you put some tongs and put it on the plate, and then you can roast some asparagus with that.
Oh, nice.
By basting it with some olive oil, and throw a little bit of mozzarella or some dry cheese on it. Put it in the oven and bake that for like 20 minutes. Then you got your full meal deal.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I like that. I've never heard about the honey and the red pepper together. That sounds amazing.
Uh-huh. Yep, it is good.
Did it take you a while to get used to using? I'm sorry?
My dog's whining out here. He's sitting over here crying.
Oh, no.
What do you want, Bai? You want some Cheerios? Okay, come on.
Did
you like Cheerios for a treat?
Oh, that's so sweet. Did it take you a while to get used to using the air fryer?
Yeah, a little bit. I did trial runs, you know, with them. You know, I had somebody... Well, actually, I have all the buttons marked with a dot, and then some of the buttons are already raised. So
I
just have somebody tell me how. It's like a phone dial. So, you know where the numbers are, and the one button, there's only a button on the left and right, and all the other buttons I don't use except for the start and the cook time. Now, the cook time, it's automatically set for a max of 350. And that's typically what you use. Now, you can lessen the temperature, but it won't go any higher than 350. Because I've made beef jerky as well using the fryer.
Oh, that sounds amazing. How long does it take for you to make beef jerky?
Oh, about 6 to 8 hours.
Wow. Do you usually do it over?
What was that?
Do you usually do your beef jerky overnight?
No, never. During the day.
Oh.
I don't like to have equipment going at night because you never know what might go wrong with it while I'm sleeping.
Sure, that's right.
So
Is it on 350?
No, the beef jerky is set around 200 degrees. About 200 you set that at, and you put a tin foil ball. And then you place that under the lid so that moisture can escape out from underneath so it dries. And then you usually have two trays. And then after about you know, halfway through, you switch the trays. You put the top tray on the top and the bottom tray, or you switch them around so that they get to dry out evenly. And then you're ready to go. When it's done, it's done. And you could stop it before the 8 hour. It depends on how dry you like it. But the drier you make it, the drier they make it, the less chances of you'll have it spoiling on you. So,
how long can you keep the beef jerky that you make that way?
Well, you can refrigerate and keep it for a long time. Or you can
like
put a
month?
Freshening. Yeah, you can put a freshening pack in it. You get freshening packs at any box store that sells things by bulk. You can get freshening packets that you just put in there, and it's all it is salt, and it keeps the moisture out. It's a little tiny. Have you ever opened up a bag of beef jerky and found that little packet in there?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what that is. That keeps the moisture out of there, so it absorbs into that little packet and stays off the meat.
Well, Roger, as we're winding up here, what do you want our audience to think of when they think of a person who's blind or visually impaired?
Or just like you, you just do things different than we do.
Yeah.
It's no different. Yeah. Disability doesn't mean inability.
Exactly. Well, how can people reach out to you if they want to get in contact with you?
Well, if they want to contact me, they can email me at dalesullivan6@gmail.com, or they can join me on Facebook at Blind Warrior Facebook page.
Okay. Well, Roger, thank you so much for being with us today.
It was a
pleasure. It's really been enlightening. I'm glad. I'm glad you liked it.
It's great. I think you're doing a wonderful thing here. Giving us a voice. Yeah.
What was that?
Giving us a voice, and thank you kindly for that.
Thank you. Well, you know, I always find that when we understand one another, it makes life a lot easier.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been Renee Rentmeester, creator, executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. You can reach out to us at www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com, or you can reach out the old-fashioned way at 305-200-9104, and have a wonderful day. Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, and you have a great evening.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.